Blog Talk Radio.
Whew, what a voice. And it gets worse. That scream went around the world. It's the sound of Günter Grass's classic novel, The Tin Drum. The Tin Drum is about Oscar, a tiny young man with a scream that can shatter glass. Oscar is born in Grass's own hometown in present-day Poland. He's born with the mind of an adult. I first saw the light of this world in the form of two 60-watt bulbs. With the exception of the obligatory perennial tear, my birth went smoothly. Effortlessly, I freed myself from the head-first position favored by mothers, embryos, and midwives alike. Let me say it once. I was one of those clairaudient infants whose mental development is complete at birth, and thereafter simply confirmed. At the age of 3, Oscar decides he's had enough of growing, and so he just stops. From there on out, he goes through life with a tin drum. He experiences the rise of the Nazis, World War II, and the destruction that follows, telling his story with a mixture of naivete and malevolence, an unreliable narrator who may or may not be crazy. When Glass published The Tin Drum, it caused a scandal. No one had written about World War II with such craftiness, such brutality, and such humor. It took 40 years, but Glass finally won the Nobel Prize. By the way, the American author John Irving has called The Tin Drum the best novel of the 20th century. And then there's the movie. Director Volker Schlöndorff won an Academy Award for his version of The Tin Drum. The book and the movie are brilliant, but if you read the book, you'll fall hard for Grass's page-turning writing, and that is a guarantee.
Welcome to In Our Craft, or Solid Art. And I am your host, Richard Weissman, and I have my co-host, Neutron Bomb, as well as some callers on hold. So let me bring them on, starting with my co-host.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Neutron. So, so I was actually incorrect. I originally thought about doing the promo for the film, but of course it's all in German, so wouldn't have translated as well to an English-speaking radio program, poetry show. So let me bring on Laurent and Thomas. So let's bring on Laurent first. Hey, Laurent.
Good evening, my friend. Good evening, Neutron.
Hey.
Thanks so much for joining us. We missed you.
My pleasure.
So let me bring on Tom, and then we can start talking. Hey, Thomas.
Hello. It's been a while.
Hey. So I'm guessing that everyone had a chance to hear that intro. Let's start with Neutron. What did you think of it?
I thought it was a perfect framing for the episode. I personally have not read the novel that Günter wrote. So for me, I always find your introductions illuminating because I would imagine that I'm not the only one who hasn't read it. But after listening to that intro, I think it's definitely going on my Audible book list to get through, which seems to be accumulating with every episode I do.
So it is a lengthy novel, but I will say it is worth the time spent to either read or listen to it. And I think there's a really good Audible translation as well that was done. Very good, actually. And of course, if you want to cheat a little bit, the film adaptation, and normally I hate adaptations of classic novels, but they really did a great job with the film as well. So well worth the read, well worth the view. And Laurent, what did you think of it?
The Tin Drum is a book that I saw on my father's shelves ever since I was old enough to remember. And he always told me to read it, in fact, several times, and I didn't. I resisted, possibly because I knew what he'd like to read, and I didn't think I would like it. So, regrets, everlasting regrets. Wonderful intro.
Yeah, it is amazing. The metaphors are, like, just hit you over the head powerful. You know, the protagonist that stopped growing at age 3, you know, as a metaphor for Nazi Germany's stunted growth in the modern era. The shattering of glass with the voice as a you know, metaphor for Kristallnacht. It just goes on and on. And Thomas, what were your thoughts?
Well, I have to admit, I hadn't read it either. I guess I'm not alone. I really like the intro. Normally I find things that are promotional for art of any kind obnoxious. And that one was actually quite illuminating in a way. And actually, I'm with Neutron. I kind of found myself feeling like, well, I should read this much more after that than I did before. So very well done.
Cool. Yeah, it is. It's an amazing novel, an amazing story. He kind of, without overstating it, but in my opinion, he kind of inspired the magical realism movement of the second half of the 20th century. So all the novels that people might be more familiar with, like, you know, or the authors like Salman Rushdie, really did drink at the well of Günter Grass's The Tin Drum. So, I can't recommend it highly enough. And, you know, I've heard people say it is the greatest novel of the 20th century. But, of course, you know, me being a Joycean, I still stick with Ulysses. But it is an amazing novel. And it has inspired some amazing poetry. So with that segue, Neutron, I'll have you take it away for our first poem.
Okay, so our first poem is by Arendt, and I'll give this one a read. It's called War Z.
Great.
We were cursed in a land that grew fangs under the tank's caress, struck by little girls' stone gazes, blood crescents born of smoking strollers. The sky is cursing us, soot and wind-boiled lashing whip. Dogs starved and let loose barking inside fire, pieces of silver worn on friends' dead eyes. Where is the beautiful fight? The glory among barren sunflower fields, there are only heroes to kill. And the earth is cursing us, cold mud mixed snow, nipping ankles, blackening toes. And all the seeds in the dark soil are cursing us, rotting purpose, taking pieces of bodies, and what lives inside waiting to bloom out of our guts. Today, I am carrying my own meat in a body bag. I'm certain the weight is my own, for even when we stop, I can't put it down. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Thanks so much. Yeah, you know, I thought this was just a perfect take on the prompt, which was, so rode the squadrons out against the gray steel foe, adding another dash of red to the sunset glow. And I think that she really captures the horror of war. It's unveiled quite well in this powerful poem. It's filled with literary allusions and vivid imagery. She paints a painful portrait of war in 2022, its terror, its stomach-twisting pain, and it was exactly what I was hoping for from our contest, that people would look at this historical novel, which was set in Nazi Germany, and see the parallel to what's going on today with Putin and the inhumane war that he started and still rages in Ukraine. So I thought it was excellent. And Laurent, your thoughts?
That opening stanza where she says, "We were cursed in a land that grew fangs under the tank's caress, struck by little girls' stone gazes, blood crescents born of smoking strollers." The contrast of a land that grew fangs under the tank's caress. Somehow the land seems more suitable to caress, the tank's more suitable to fangs. So I love that reversal. The language all the way through is strong and it's vivid, and she manages to mine what beauty there is in war. Where is the beautiful fight, the glory among barren sunflower fields? She doesn't speak of beauty, yet there is beauty in this piece, in the language, in the phrasing, and where she brings us. Quite a remarkable piece.
Great comment, absolutely. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, this actually reminds me of an image of a Ukrainian grandmother handing out sunflower seeds to Russian soldiers. Now, that might seem strange, but she actually told them, this is on Twitter, that she wanted the sunflower seeds to sprout out of their dead corpses. And it's quite disturbing. And personally, if I'd been told that by a grandmother in a country I was invading, I'd be a bit worried about the rest of the folk there and maybe turn the other way. But I really enjoyed the way this poem was crafted, and I agree with you, Laurent, that there is beauty in the darkness and also the light, and almost the cyclical nature of this poem in that in death there is rebirth and we are all returned to the earth. My favorite part was, "And all the seeds in the dark soil are cursing its rotting purpose, taking pieces of body, and what lives inside waits to bloom out of our guts." Visceral gut punch of a poem. As I said, to me personally, I've, and also Laurent, there is a beauty in both the language and the cyclical nature.
Absolutely. And Thomas, I'll give you a final word on the poem.
I thought the discussion of the sunflower fields was a really nice allusion to Flanders Fields and that poem about poppies. So she begins to tie all the wars together. The sense of despair in the last verse is striking, and the sense that we, after the war is all over, there'll be a certain renewal, all the seeds in the dark soil, rotting purpose. There's things must, in the sense of that things must go on, but at what cost, really struck me as a strong note in this piece.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. So I do have someone on hold. Let me bring them on. 443, you're on the air.
This is Martha. Hi.
Hi, Martha. Welcome.
Hi, Martha.
So let me actually ask the question, since we have a lot of people that are in the room that have poetry on the board. Does anyone have to read and run?
I don't have to read and run right now, but my legs act up.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to.
Maybe.
Problematic.
Yep, yep.
I mean, I'm going to try and stick it out, but there's no guarantee.
Okay. Yep, within maybe, we'll try and get you on the board within the first 45 minutes. How does that sound?
That's fine.
Okay, great. All right. So now that we have that established, I am turning the board back to you, Neutron.
Okay, so I'm going to get Tom's poem up next, and then I'm going to jump over to the carryovers and that we had from last week. So, Tom, when you're ready.
Okay. Building codes. The past is always at war with the future. It is the nature of change to disregard its path of destruction. Legions of humans resist math, chaos, and power. Refuse to let them be more than refuse. We live in spite of all injunctions. Demand equality without stopping to think. There are some in power who, for all the strutting, you know, you are better at what makes a human being worthwhile. In the clamor of injustice, the occasional benefit of misbehavior is only coincidence, not purpose. History is not a shrine. When you are dead, history will speak the popular theory about your misconduct and ignorance. The only glory, the bottle, the bar, and your buddy's laughter. Children, family, and character deserve better than any pledge of allegiance. Their value is what we build our foundations upon. We need to stop blowing up the house so we can all get a little sun. Stop living in the basement. Learn the purpose windows truly serve. End poem.
Great read, Thomas. Thank you so much for bringing it to us. We'll get you some comments. So, Martha, let's start with you if we can.
I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of hard-hitting truths, and I really loved the way it was presented. It was a really good job.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really liked this one, Thomas. You know, just the juxtaposition of the Pledge of Allegiance versus children, family, character, it had a great existential vibe that fit the prompt, and Gunter Grass's work quite well. Just really strong work and making us look at the insanity of war and how we keep going down these dead ends over and over again. So a good speaking of truth. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Thomas does a wonderful job of speaking to an individual's character. The important thing, really, when he says the past is always at war with the future, it's the nature of change to disregard its path of destruction. You know, math, chaos, and power, refuse to let them be more than refuse. We know we're better than some people who think we're not, because the power does corrupt, and they do strut, don't they? And they write history in their own words, with their own bent, their own direction. But what makes a human being worthwhile, I think, is what's important here. The occasional benefit of misbehavior is only coincidence, not purpose. I love that, the occasional benefit of misbehavior. It's implying going against the rigid structure that exists in whatever society the individual is living in. And I love his, history is not a shrine. When you are dead, history will speak the popular theory, almost, you know, to the victor go the spoils of being able to write about what happened from the point of view of the victor. And the glory of the bottle, the bar, and Buddy's laughter, I think is rather important, because moments when we can kind of be ourselves. And again, he reiterates, children, family, and character deserve better than any pledge of allegiance. In other words, you don't have to be straight-laced, preoccupied with supporting the powers that be. Be who you are. Build your foundation upon something solid. And those last lines, stop living in the basement. Learn the purpose windows truly serve, not to separate us from the outside world, but to give us a glimpse of life beyond where we are right now. It's a terrific piece, Thomas.
Oh, thank you.
Great analysis, Laurent. And Neutron, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, look, those last lines, they were quite effective in bringing home the entire poem. I find, Thomas, with your writing that there's always a message, and the lines, we need to stop blowing up the house so we can all get a little sun, stop living in the basement, learn the purpose windows truly serve, just rings true at the moment with the Ukrainians that are currently under siege by the Russians. And I've lost count of the number of times the ceasefire has been obliterated by soldiers on the ground, and they're just trying to survive at the moment. And I hope they do get to learn the true purpose of windows very soon. Excellent poem.
Thank you.
Great comment, Neutron. Okay, and with that, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, so we have Our Minds Are the Rubble of Kaviv by F. Sharp. And there is a SoundCloud, but I don't know if it got uploaded,
there is.
Richard.
Let's see. You see one. Here's the tricky part, though. I think he has two poems because I think he wrote one for this show, too. So if everyone's all right with it, what we'll do is I'll give it, like, a five-second play and see if it's the right one or not. And if not, I'll pause it right away. So the opening words, well, I guess I'm going to say the title first, Let Not Be Our Minds in the Rubble of Kiev, the Black Smoke Rises. So that's what we're listening for.
Humanity juxtaposed.
Okay, so that was not it. So yeah, let's give this one a read.
Okay, so if Laurent,
you like
if you could give this one a read, it would be great.
Sure. It's Sharp gives us Let Not Be Our Minds in the Rubble of Kiev. The black smoke rises from the concrete rubble of Ukraine as Russian tanks lob mortar shells and aphasia builds for witnesses outside the combat zones. No words make clear through the rising smoke. Oxygen masks must drop around the world. Action must be taken. Clarity of mind. A torpedo, a call to action, like the sinking of the Lusitania. Where and when will be the landing at Dunkirk to avoid societal collapse, to fight another day? Let not be our minds in the rubble of Kiev. No hope asphyxiating. The world needs wings to traverse that ocean of fear. Lindbergh's flight, shore to shore. Trepidation to conquest. Not like the tragedy depicted in The Raft of the Medusa, where almost everyone perishes and hope is cannibalized by patience. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And Thomas, if we can have you give the first comment.
This is such a striking collection of history and all the ways that we as human beings find a way somehow to destroy ourselves. It's almost as if the minute we declare war, we find a way to high value ethics and any sense of decency. And this just drives home that point, incident after incident after incident. The line, hope is asphyxiating, is strikingly on key, and probably stands out of my mind above and beyond everything else in this piece. I'm very well done, very, very hard, but very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. I want to just bring Pam into the room. Hold on one sec. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Richard. Hey, Neutron. Hi, Lauren.
Hey.
Hi, Tom. Good to hear y'all.
Thanks. You too. Thanks so much for joining us again. So I don't know if you had a chance to hear Scott Sharp's poem.
Only the very end. Sorry.
Okay, no worries. Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was drawn to this section. Hope is cannibalized by patience. Such a great expression. And after reading the author note, I was very impressed by the historical knowledge conveyed throughout the poem. It has a strong social conscience throughout. I suppose for me, it is imperative we do whatever we can globally to alleviate the suffering of the Ukrainians, whether it be donations, sanctions, or hopefully intervening forces. I think this next section here kind of demonstrates that inaction can be just as bad as action, where it says, where and when will be the landing at Dunkirk to avoid societal collapse? Fight another day, let not be our minds in the rubble of Kyiv. Hope asphyxiating. Great poem.
Absolutely, yeah, great comment. I, too, really love this one. And the interesting thing was that it was actually a carryover written to the prompt, biology gives you a brain, life turns it into a mind, from Eugenides' Middlesex. And yet it matches so well and fits so well into tonight's quotes and prompts. I especially like smoke of bombings is clear, the oxygen mask dropped, clarity of mind, a call to action like the sinking of the Lusitania. The poem reminds that although history doesn't repeat, as Twain wrote, it rhymes. There's a strong mix of headlines from history. And I know we've got a big room now, so Laurent, I'm going to give you final word on this poem, and then we'll move forward.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale, isn't it? The poet urges mm-hmm. us not to be too bound up into the concrete rubble of Ukraine, because if we dwell on that and nothing else, we may not realize where we are and what's about to happen. He makes very specific points about certain moments in history, like the sinking of the Lusitania, the landing at Dunkirk. Those are moments that electrified worlds and led to the great disaster of World War II, or things like Lindbergh's flight, which took the world by storm and urged us not to be on the raft of the Medusa, and just be patient, because hope is cannibalized by patience. So when those moments arise in history, and he's very good at detailing them, learn from them, be warned by them, realize what's about to happen. Terrific piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so Neutron, I see we have our next one, and this one, I do have the SoundCloud loaded, so let me pull that. Okay. It is here.
loved ones, dear you, cher toi. To you, midnight has already passed. My quill was hesitant to write to you. I will hardly write praise, rather what my heart whispers to me. Life has put you in my way. You have delighted my heart with such force. I was almost crazy about you. I didn't know what was happening to me no more. My tired eyes wanted to read you repeatedly. They were thirsty to talk to you about everything and nothing, to hear you, to see you for real. I kept thinking about you. Long ago, the days were cruel. They made me suffer and stole my dreams. And there was, I dreamt of sweet dreams that beautify me with glares. Yet, as soon as the sun went down tonight, I remember nothing was meant to be. It bent my heart. Cher toi, minuit a déjà passé, ma plume hésitait de t'écrire. Cependant, je n'écrirai guère des éloges, plutôt ce que mon cœur me souffle. La vie t'a mis sur mon chemin, tu as ravi mon cœur avec une telle force. J'étais presque folle de toi, c'est plus que m'est arrivé. Mes yeux fatigués voulaient te lire, te relire sans cesse. J'avais soif de te parler de tout et de rien, de t'entendre, de te voir pour de vrai. Je ne cessais de penser à toi. Il n'y a pas longtemps, le jour était cruel. Ils m'ont fait tant souffrir. Ils m'ont fait voler mes rêves. Et là, je rêvais de beaux rêves qui m'ont embelli. Pourtant, dès que le soleil s'est couché aujourd'hui, je me suis rappelé, rien n'était censé être, ça a serré mon cœur. End of poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud follow-up. So this was the other carryover we had from 2 weeks ago, and the prompt was, falling in love is easy, anyone can fall. It was holding on that was tricky, from Moriarty, The Husband's Secret. It's probably a nice balance for tonight, which is kind of heavy poems, because, of course, tonight we're doing Günter Grass and mainly poetry inspired by the Tin Drum, which is very heavy. So a nice change of pace for the evening. And a beautiful piece, beautiful SoundCloud. And Pam, as our newcomer, why don't we start comments off with you?
Yeah, I thought, as always, you know, Sala, she has such a talent for writing brevities that really strike a chord with the heart. And I like that she went with a quail, you know, because she could have gone with any wingless bird, but I feel like by going with a quail, a bird that's known to hide away in the brush, to jump out nervously at any little noise, really conveys the idea of someone who has a nervous energy because of things that they've been through. I also like how that ending line in the second part really speak of the way that oftentimes in the storm of life amongst people who are rowdy or, you know, just angry, that quiet voice can be so easily lost. I think this is beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. And Martha, your thoughts?
Well, I really liked it. I love that thing with quail and the metaphor that it presented. I thought it was really well done. Great job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Yeah, look, I thought it was really interesting how she interwove the French and the English together. I haven't heard Salwa do that before. I think it was breathtaking imagery, especially this part here. All the broken windows, one by one, his detached eyes saw her fly with her stunned tears flapping her wings. Her soft humming got lost in the sky. It's melancholic in its extended metaphor that life sometimes drowns out our humming, our essence as a human, but still he bore witness to her life. Very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was a skillfully crafted metaphor. Always, her lyricism is just stunning. It's a beautiful piece and a great balance for the night, I thought. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next piece. Where do you want to go?
Okay, so I've got Martha's poem up next, but I believe there is a SoundCloud.
There is a SoundCloud. We're all getting to rest our voices here a little bit. We got, I think, six SoundClouds. So here we go. I'll cue it up.
Not Gonna Fall for You by Martha Gettle. You think I'm gonna fall in love with you, but I know exactly what you'll do. You leave a lot of broken hearts behind. Your next one won't be mine. I've met guys like you before, and you will never fool me anymore. I'm strong enough to stand on my own. I won't be falling for your heart of stone. So you better pack it up and just move on. I won't even think about you when you're gone. I won't get caught up in your undertow. It's time for you to leave, you know. You think I'm gonna fall for you, and you're gonna make me your fool. Yeah, you think you're gonna break my heart, but you can't even start. So you better pack it up and just move on. I won't even think about you when you're gone. I won't get caught up in your undertow. It's time for you to leave, you know. You'd make me fall in love, then you'd go. Love is just a game to you, I know. But I am stronger than you think. You won't be pushing my heart over the brink.
Great SoundCloud, Martha. Thanks so much. And your pen is always straight from the heart. This one's no exception. It rings out as a strong voice of experience and yet not embittered. Just great as always. And I love where you went with the prompt because you remain true to your kind of natural wheelhouse of love songs, love poems. And yet it was definitely grounded in the prompt, which was prompt two. You are vain and wicked as a genius should be. So really well done, Martha. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And let's get you some comments. So Neutron, what'd you think?
Yeah, look, I really enjoy Martha's SoundCloud. It was almost a tale of push and pull, and I think Martha has storytelling down pat. I wish sometimes in life that I had recognized earlier that my heart was going to be stomped on, but I'm stronger for it from all the baggage I carry around. So I suppose all you can do is live and learn and absorb life's lessons from those put in your path. Life is but a journey. And my favorite part was that last stanza, you'd make me fall in love, then you'd go. Love is just a game to you, I know. But I am stronger than you think. You won't be pushing my heart over the brink. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Thomas, your thoughts?
Well, I like that part of the chorus where she says, I won't get caught in your undertow. Because so often people don't get you up front, catch you because you suddenly realize, oh, I might be alone if they leave, and you clutch at them when the better sense part of you is going, so don't care. Don't worry about it. You can handle it. I like to cut that really, really nicely, the whole, not only the effect of the person coming in trying to make you fall in love with them, but also recognizing that you didn't want to get caught by the effect of them leaving at the same time, that she wasn't going to be played in either direction. It's just very sharply done, very well done.
Great comment, Thomas. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, when faced with the vanity and the wickedness of this erstwhile lover, there is no emotional collapse, no falling apart, simply a display of the strength that says, do your worst, but you're not pushing me over the brink. And I like that kind of strength, that resolve, that survival that blooms so frequently in Martha's songs and demonstrates her strength.
Great comment. And Pam, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this is just a wonderful heartfelt song. I thought it worked really nice with the prompt and the whole idea of, the realization that somebody is only looking out for themselves and would not make a good relationship. But then there's that also that kind of sadness at the end of, you know, realizing that they're gone. And, you know, maybe there was that kind of false sense of hope that you would be the exception, but, you know, never are. And just beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Pam. And with that, we are ready for our next one, Neutron.
Okay, Laurent, if you're ready, we'll get you to read your poem now.
All right. I suppose I should apologize for its length. It's called Leaving Rabbits Behind. Curiously, I awoke one morning, uncertain of the air I breathed and unsure of the automatic musculature of breath required to stay alive. Breath had always been reflexive, the body striving for perfect oxygenation, an expansion of the ribcage without conscious thought. Like bread dough, whose yeast expands the whole, because that is the due diligence of the stuff, to inevitably rise and be thrust into the fire, adopting a crackling crust and crumb to delight the palates. I made a sudden effort, sucking in the morning air of my 73rd year. 60 seconds passed before the first gasp, 90 seconds until the next, when I shuddered and loosed the stale air, immediately focusing on the next expansion. Would it arrive of its own volition, or lay hiding, frozen like a rabbit in the brush, nose twitching, on guard against predators? Rabbit held his ground, and I was forced to try to flush it out, to make it run and leap in a mad dash for safety, where it could again pause in eternal watchfulness, all a quiver, ears swirling in fits and starts for any sign of danger. And I saw the rabbit ambushed, thumped hard by a leaping form that began beating at it like a tin drum, producing a sodden, heavy sound of flesh striking flesh. Move, rabbit, I muttered. Run and save yourself. Refuse life as a victim. Fight back. Rabbit slowly succumbed to his beating and lay stiff and unmoving. Mr. Grant, a voice exclaimed, help me to help you. Again, the rabbit was pummeled, but now I felt the blows myself, skin and bone reverberating with the strength of each onslaught, which I slowly became aware were women's fists striking my chest. My eyes shot open, and I heaved a convulsive breath, staring into Mrs. Kravitz's wide eyes as she bent over me, ready to strike again, her small fists balled up like a combatant at a prize fight. Praise be, she exclaimed, You were dead. Not a breath. I had to strike you to bring you back. Emma, I replied. Was I beyond the little mouth-to-mouth to prime the well? Emma Kravitz, widowed landlady of the boarding house where I lived, flushed and allowed as how she could never take such a liberty with me. I assured her such liberties were not only allowed, they were desired, especially when they saved my life. It is odd how certain moments will bring out the unspoken in all of us. Without another word, she stripped out of her clothing and climbed into bed with me, nestling up to my chest, pinching one of my nipples firm and taut. In moments, she was again beating at the rabbit, who did not hide, but chose to engage, deep breath following deep breath, until all the world was air, and we flew before it like a pair of swans cupping in mid-flight, leaving rabbits far behind, invisibly brown against the sear earth. End poem.
Wow. What an amazing poem, and also just a masterful delivery, masterful read. I thought this was a wonderful interqueen, Thanatos, personified by the fearful rabbit who cowers at the prospects of predators, seeing the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, and Eros, who's driven into full wakefulness by that kindly landlady, Emma Kravitz. It was truly a wonderful story, quite well told. And I had to notice, actually, as soon as you put it on the board, I liked it, and then I was going to come back and read it. And before I had the chance, it was already awarded a well-deserved front-page pick. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was fangirling when I was reading this piece. A harrowing tale turned sensual. I wasn't expecting the ending whatsoever. I'm glad you called to read it because I think you did it the most justice. It had a fast pace about it, and the extended metaphor of the rabbit was great. I'm hoping this was fiction-based, but you just never know with Laurent's rights. They contain such vivid imagery, and they always seem to be spoken from experience. I think my favorite part was, and I saw the rabbit ambushed, thumped hard by a leaping form that began beating at it like a tin drum, producing a sodden, heavy sound of flesh striking flesh. Move, rabbit, I muttered. Run and save yourself. Refuse life as a victim. Fight back. And I'll end my comment by saying I was and will always root for the rabbit continuing to beat, my friend. Well done.
Thank you.
Great, great comment, Neutron. And Martha, your thoughts?
Oh, I thought it was great. I love the metaphor of the rabbit for breath and the struggle of not breathing, and I really liked the ending. I thought it was really, really well done.
Great comment. And Thomas, your thoughts?
I thought the use of the rabbit both as a metaphor and to sort of capture how the strange way our inner consciousness works. I mean, I got hit by a car once and knocked unconscious, and my first memory, I didn't even see the car coming, and my first memory was wondering why I was sleeping in the gutter in front of the house where I lived, and then suddenly realized I was waiting what was going on because the guy was trying to put a thing around my neck. And you caught that really, really well, the with the vibrance and the energy, and then slipping it, the transition to waking to the woman. I just thought that you did that beautifully. It fit right with the way life seems to work, which is often more by illusion and madness than anything else. And the ending, a perfect fit. Very well done, Ron.
Thank you, Thomas.
Absolutely great comment. And Pam?
Yeah, I really like this. This is one of those writers that are so captivating. It could have easily been like a few more stanzas, and it still would have held my interest. I really like how, in general, you spoke throughout of the life, death, and desire. I love the extended metaphor of the rabbit, of the idea of that being the inability to catch your breath and, you know, shouting at yourself inside to stop playing the victim. And, you know, it's so interesting to me how you've captured what I think many of us can agree with, is that making love to somebody is one of the most life-affirming acts you can do. And
yep.
So I think it makes sense to have that be a transition from almost dying to wanting to make love. So powerful, powerful write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, and with that, we are ready for our next piece, Neutron.
Okay, so Richard, if you could read Mamuel's poem, that would be great.
Sure. Okay. So this is The Sunset War by Mamuel. He strapped his helmet on his head, his camouflage fatigues all set. Then he carried his machine gun, getting ready for the dawn. His platoon set out to the east from where the enemy held. But he knows they've all been surrounded. There was no other recourse until they're dead. He was only 17 years old, too young for war, but he felt too old. The invasion was unwarranted. This wasn't what he wanted. But he'd rather die fighting for a land disputed and be oppressed and persecuted. So on he marched towards death or glory, wondering what would become of his story. End of poem. And Neutron, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was a really powerful write and a great answer to the prompt, one of our more popular tonight. So rode the squadrons out against the gray steel foe, adding another dash of red to the sunset glow. And he almost puts on his figurative armor to go and die for a war that was not of his own making, which makes the last stanza even more gripping. But he'd rather die fighting for a land disputed than be oppressed and persecuted. So on he marched towards death or glory, wondering what would become of his story. And I think we've touched on this earlier. History is written by those whom survived the atrocities of war, and I think that has been captured well in this poem. Very clever piece.
Absolutely. Great comment, Neutron. I, too, really loved this one. I loved where she went with the prompt. Although the poem is not specific, the narrative voice has the feel of a Ukrainian soldier and could be ripped from today's headlines. The shift to rhyming in that final stanza was also haunting and appropriate given the subject matter. Just a real strong offering. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely a powerful write. And I like how, as you mentioned, Richard, that it could be taken from today's headlines, but any time of war it could be taken from. I really like how, instead of showing us war as a giant machine with nameless faces and large groups of soldiers marching, she shows us the humanity of it by taking the story down to one young individual fighting a battle, a war that he doesn't want to be part of, but he, as Neutron mentioned, you know, he marches forward in death or in glory because he fears being oppressed and persecuted. So just really a powerful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I'll take one more comment. Martha, if your thoughts.
I really liked it. I thought it was an excellent portrayal. It did make you think of Ukraine and the younger people that are having to fight the war, because they said everyone is being being put into the fight, and I thought it was really good portrayal of that. It was really well done.
Absolutely, great comment. Okay, and with that, we'll move on to our next one.
Okay, so this should be the SoundCloud that we've got for S-Sharp, Humanity Juxtaposed.
Okay. great, thanks. And, you know, I have to say again that behind the scenes, Phil My Eyes had actually private messaged me and got it all queued up, and I didn't see it until afterwards. But this one we do have a SoundCloud for. So I will pull that. Hold on 1 second.
Humanity Juxtaposed. White walls carry silent conversations. Disdain in a stare across the room. From wall to wall, Beethoven's grim countenance framed in cherry wood. Hitler's menacing existence mounted and encased in dark mahogany. At odds, beauty of the fifth concerto, drama building to a crescendo of sound vis-a-vis passion for creation, Eden and music, overrun by a panzer tank. Along the front lines of destruction. Under a blitzkrieg, a hail of bombs. Sounds intensifying, violins playing, strings quickening, conductor raising arms in wild gesticulations, barbed wire strung across my eyes, a voice screaming in German, sounds like hell itself speaks, hand raised, Sieg Heil salute, crowds roar. Silence, white walls, and steely stairs.
Wow. So I have to say, beyond the poem itself, the audio was just an amazing production. The accompaniment of the background, you know, everything from the fifth and the audio of Hitler, you know, the Hitler speech just made it just dynamite. And it was just so pitch perfect underlining of the beats of the poem, just amazing. And I thought it was a great juxtaposition of the creative and destructive that resides within us all, made larger than life through Grasse's archetypes. Just fantastic work. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
That prompt number 11 was an absolutely delicious one. The grim portrait of Beethoven hanging over the piano, and then being replaced by the equally grim portrait of Hitler being hung on the same nail. And then what passes after that? Well, he extends that absolutely delicious prompt into this wonderful poem, and we see exactly what happens when Hitler's menacing existence mounted and encased in dark mahogany is at odds with the beauty of the fifth concerto. It's just... it's a way of looking at the moment that I find absolutely satisfying, if you will. The passion for creation, Eden and music overrun by a panzer tank, and then the music accompanying the words, marvelously done, phrases like barbed wire strung across my eyes, a voice screaming in German, sounds like hell itself. And, you know, it did, too. Although, it's funny, during Hitler's speeches, and I don't know why, but there was emphasis on pronunciation, clarity of words, to make sure that there was no mistakes being made in the interpretation of what was being said. And I found that underlying the entire piece, the crowd's roar, the silence, and then the return to the white walls and the steely stairs. No mistake there. We know exactly what's going on. This is a hell of a piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Oh, how good was that? SoundCloud. I like to wait until show day to listen to the SoundClouds, and that did not disappoint, but just put that lightly. So I think it was almost an unlikely coffins grouped together in an unlikely mausoleum, with the frenzy of music typifying the mood, a bracing intensity which answers the prompt that Laurent touched on just then. The part that resonated most was Eden in music overrun by a panzer tank along the front lines of destruction under a blitzkrieg, a hail of bombs. Just great.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I really liked this one. This was one of the first SoundClouds I ever got to hear of his. And I thought he did a wonderful job with that, with balancing out the background music and the reading voice. I really thought this was a strong write all the way through. It had amazing imagery and metaphors. There was something about this that I felt that he didn't directly say something, but allowed the reader to interpret his metaphors as you know, they related to them. You know, I did mention that in my written comment that the phrase "white walls" always makes me think of the song by Cream, which was cool with me because I like that song. But also the mention of the white walls makes me think of neutrality or whitewashed tombs that were the hypocritical Pharisees. And in particular, I mean, this is a strong write all the way through, but I was particularly struck by the line "barbed wire strung across my eyes." You know, I felt like that was a representation of those experiences where we really, truly can never forget them. Because when they come into our mind's vision, it just hurts to remember. Just a powerful, thought-provoking, right, on times of war. And I really like also how he mentions the Eden in music, that idea that in times of hell, we can find something beautiful in music. So wonderful, right? Congratulations on the pending pick, and very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next poem.
Okay, so Pam, if you're up for it, I've got your poem up next.
All right. This is the panoramic vision on the wings of a fly, and it goes like this. I am a Gemini. By nature, we are the flighty children of Mercury, prone to pushing against the window pane over and over again until the panoramic vision outside bores us. Then we will move on to the light bulb, the laundry basket, the rim of the coffee cup where spotted wings wilt into theater masks. Air signs can throw random thoughts into a pot of onion soup. Devils have no reason for individuality. They do not request the opinion of heroes. And this has little to nothing to do with me. I am not a hero, at least not right now, and perhaps never. But I like to dream, as do all gifted with the mad love of words, someday, when I am ashes, an individual will read my poetry and soar to victory upon them. But in the here and now, my words are nothing more than the tapping of my fingers against a screen, transferring thoughts from a mind that runs in strawberry fields and cashmere coin tosses. If you were to visit me, you'd find the lingering scent of sandalwood and the flickering flame of a clean burning candle. I could get lost in that flame where gloom seems a more acceptable substitute for clinical depression and trials of healing. On the moss-green wall, a stone mosaic lizard hangs upside down, contemplating the shifting tides of war and propaganda that live on the wings of the housefly. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, I love this piece. And I so identified with you. I was right there with you as you dreamt of an individual soaring to victory upon your words. And in the deflating of the balloon, the tapping of my fingers against the screen, I've had both those experiences in my mind and in the process of writing, so I was right there with you. I thought it was a strong existential offering, life-affirming, despite having eyes wide open to life's slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Truly a worthy piece of poetry. Thank you so much for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
And absolutely. Let's get you some comments. Laurent, what were your thoughts?
I'm almost tempted to wonder whether or not Pam is that housefly itself. When you push against the window pane over and over, there's a yearning, a desire, evidently for what we see. But finally, one day it bores us and we move on to the day-to-day, the minutiae of boredom, perhaps, the light bulb, the laundry basket, the rim of a coffee cup. She claims she's not a hero, but she likes to dream, as do all gifted with a mad love of words. Someday when I mash as an individual, will read my poetry and soar to victory upon them, and then maybe she is the hero. But in the here and now, my words are nothing more than the tapping of my fingers against the screen. And maybe that's the gloom, the melancholy, which is kind of countervailed by the lingering scent of sandalwood and the flickering flame of a clean-burning candle. I'm not sure that would make me gloomy, but when you need to get lost in something and then accept gloom, not accept it, but deal with it in the flame, losing yourself in it. The end stanzing, the stone mosaic lizard hanging upside down, contemplating the shifting tides of war and propaganda that live on the wings of the housefly, kind of indicates to me that perhaps the gloom stems from that. Not sure. But it's a marvelous piece. I wish I'd read it earlier. I would really like to dig into it a little bit more. I'm not sure I made all that much sense, but excellent piece.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great comment, Lauren. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm so glad that Pam tackled this prompt. I actually tried to write to it, but it was beyond me. But I think Pam delivered a cohesive stream of consciousness, and for that I am both happy and in awe. It's so effortless in nature, and the imagery is unique as always. My favorite part was to the light bulb, the laundry basket, the rim of the coffee cup where spotted wings wilt into theater masks. And I said in my pre-comments, mad skills lady, and I stand by it.
Thank you.
Great comment. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one.
All right, Richard, I'm just going to get your poem up. So if you want to give us an intro while I do that, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, this is one of my favorite novels, and as a result, I decided to kind of, in a way, try and tackle the entirety of the novel as opposed to any one single prompt, just to kind of get the beats of the novel out there and also to speak to the tragedy in Ukraine. So that's what I did. It's called Beating of the Tin Drum. Oscar had willed his flower to wilt, deep within shadowy corridors of his grassless Danzig labyrinth. A beat rose amidst the sleepy sea of complacency and Zig Heil salutes as he rat-tat-tatted on his tin drum till his kindergarten teacher snatched the wooden drumsticks, and he wailed an ear-piercing screech that shattered her glasses, blinding her deeper to pure swastika and death. More than 75 years after, the rat-tat-tat of our tin drums revived, along with that ear-piercing wail of newly orphaned kinder, whose uprooted buds lay scattered along Ukrainian roadsides, never to flower, never to sing. End poem.
Excellent read, Richard. I thought this was an immensely nuanced write and so very well done. I think you have shone a light on the similarities of past war on the Ukrainian tragedies inflicted by the Russians. And it reminds me of that story that I mentioned earlier for Arendt's poem with the Ukrainian grandmother handing out the sunflower seeds. The part that resonated most was till his kindergarten teacher snatched the wooden drumsticks and he wailed an ear-piercing screech that shattered her glasses, blinding her deeper to pure swastika and death. Very inspirational. And Sam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is, wow. I mean, this is a strong write. You can tell you can definitely tell from both the poem and your footnotes that it is one of your favorite books. I like snatched the wooden drumsticks and he wailed an ear-piercing screech that shattered her glasses, blinding her deeper to pure swastika and death. Just a really powerful look at how people can be blind to what's going on around them, you know, especially back in World War II, Nazi Germany. I think it was probably a lot easier to use the excuse of being blind. Now, obviously, we don't have that as much with so much information available within seconds. But you know, there's a different type of blindness nowadays. You know, it's a refusal to see despite what's right in front of you. And I really like how you can, as Neutron mentioned, you connect the two, you know, whose uprooted buds lay scattered along Ukrainian roadsides, never to flower, never to sing. You know, that is just a raw and honest look at how the ugliness of war takes all the beauty away, and then it's never promised that it will return. So it's just a strong emotive write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, I'm not particularly sure I want to separate one part of this from any other. It's a necessary whole. It's short in length, but it's vast in scope. And to be able to begin with one of the central topics of the book, so subtly wilted his flower to die as opposed to life, and move with ease to the Third Reich the way you did was, I thought, masterful. The scream in broken glasses was Kristallnacht presented when least expected. Not that I didn't expect it, but you introduced it so smoothly, almost effortlessly. And now, of course, the drum beats again in Ukraine. And the world watches, listening to the drum. I thought it was a virtuoso performance.
Thanks a lot. Okay, and with that, I think we are ready for our next one.
certainly are. So I've got Eric Svensson up next, and I believe there is a SoundCloud.
There is. So we can rest our voices once again, and I will cue it up.
Beneath the baobab tree, round and round we go, natives in search of mankind's cradle, naked bodies covered in white clay, sprocket locked we pint and dance survival. Round and round we go, beneath the illustrious upside down tree, roots branch into cobalt copper-plated sky, arms piston pump-pump to jumpstart Python body quest. First nuclear natives fled back to mankind's cradle. Each white clay chrysalis pines for rebirth. Convex buttocks, sockets, concave abdomens. Survivors Python dance around the Homo sapiens ancestral baobab tree. Cradle of mankind commemorates post apocalyptic Europe. French pate de foie gras, Soviet caviar, English corned beef, Danish butter cookies, Dutch eggs, South African ginger and plum preserves, French plum jam and honey, Danish boiled eggs, Hungarian salami, American cookies and raisin bread, Dutch hot chocolates, tin drums replaced with calabash gourds, Nubian nights beneath the Southern Cross, Savannah grass harps lord legendary warriors, obsidian eyes warmly welcome post-apocalyptic stragglers. Round and round we'll all go, foreign natives seeking solace in mankind's cradle, naked war-ravaged bodies ladled with white clay, sprocket locked, bombshell shocked, we'll python dance rebirth. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Eric. So, as usual, Eric presents us with a quite layered piece. When I first read it, I appreciated the cyclical vibe that it had, how the first and final stanza mirrored each other, which itself seemed a metaphor for history's rhyming nature, as starkly reminded by today's headlines. And I'll stay with that comment, but what hit me on this second read was this kind of tour de force movement throughout the globe, you know, with nods to different foods and the French foods and the Soviet caviar and England and Denmark and on. So it's definitely a read that deserves more than one poem that deserves more than one read. Lots of layers and very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I thought there was a strong social commentary throughout. As with most of Eric's pieces, it is very dense with the imagery. And I definitely agree with you, Richard, in regards to the cyclical nature of this poem, and also that it deserves a few reads to get to the individual layers, so to speak. It was a magnificent quality, particularly these two sections here. Beneath the illustrious upside-down tree, roots branch into cobalt copper-plated sky, and each white clay chrysalis pines for rebirth, convex buttocks, socket concave abdomen. Now, I have to say, this is the first time I've seen Eric get tripped up in a SoundCloud, and I am absolutely amazed at that, because when you're doing SoundClouds, to get through something as linguistically tongue-twisting as one of Eric's poems, I'm impressed. He did well. So a really interesting and engaging piece, as always. Keep writing.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree with Neutron. This is an interesting and engaging piece. And I don't mind admitting that there was parts of this that made me extremely hungry. I just love the idea of the Dutch hot chocolate, the Hungarian salami, the Danish butter cookies. I mean, a lot of that sounds absolutely delicious. But the main message I got of this was because, you know, we have the imagery of the convex buttocks, socket, concave abdomen, survivor's python, dance around the Homo sapiens ancestral baobab tree. So here we have people who are starving and hoping and, you know, and still they dance. And then we go on to people who not only have food, they have food that's an indulgence, a luxury. It's not food that just keeps you alive, it's food for the sake of pleasure. And so it really shows that we live in a world that is both a world of starvation and a world of gluttony. I also really like how he brought in the gourd drums and the baobab tree. You know, I thought that was just a powerful imagery throughout. But I really felt like within those images that he got to the idea of being more connected with nature. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, so with that, I am going to turn it back to you, Neutron, because I know we've only got 40 minutes left.
No, I know it's gone quickly tonight. So if I can get Pam to read Uma's poem, Making Up With Myself.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Making Up With Myself by Uma 71, and it goes like this. Bring me some cheer, O March. I am a dewdrop about to be sucked up by the sun or slip off the leaf of life without gifting it a dusty dot of smudged wetness, a sign that I existed in lessons, sustained and repeated. For every mistake returning to the cycle of existence, I like it here because this is who I am, shrunk in surface tension. A globular dot to rise and fall, to etch and erase, a fidgety condensation. Yet I dislike that I am one in many unnamed similitudes. If oblivion is the final perfection, why then? I cry over this pinch of pain in evaporation and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thanks so much. And Laurent, if we can start comments off of you.
Yeah, I get the sense of someone who keeps wanting to be remade, perhaps better each time, and yet the process is painful. She likes who she is. This is who I am, shrunken surface tension, a globular dot to rise and fall, to etch and erase, a fidgety condensation. Yet the poet dislikes that fact. If oblivion is the final perfection, why then I cry over this pinch of pain and evaporation? If I am to be unconscious, why am I crying about going there? Because, you know, there's not going to be any pain. You don't know what you are when you're dead, do you? Evaporate. And you got to be satisfied with that. Nice piece.
Great comment, Laurent. And Neutron, what do you think?
Can you come back to me in next comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I love this piece. I thought it was a wonderful offering on the nature of existence. Truly a feast for mind and soul. Very strong. She's always such a spiritual writer, and this one was no exception. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final words.
I thought this was just wonderful. I do like how she has a touch of spirituality within many of her writes, including this one. I like that this is an extended metaphor and a personification of that drop of dew that wonders about its existence and wonders, you know, is it possible to be something other than just like every other drop of dew that isn't remembered after it dries away? I really thought there was wonderful personification in to rise and fall, to etch and erase, a fidgety condensation. What a perfect description of those of us who just fidget and wait for something, anything to happen. So just absolutely an amazing write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great insight. Okay, Neutron, so I see we have your poem next, whenever you're ready.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, so this one's called Potty Mouth Aphorism. A fleet-footed presence of the ankles with questions, never-ending questions. One would flow to another like a babbling brook carving a path for a lone leaf to travel downstream. But the weight of those leaves improved synapses and ganglia. Goo-goo-ga-ga transpired into structured vocabulary and potty-mouth aphorisms inserted therapy of a surgeon's scalpel cutting into the perianal flubber of my right ass cheek. But where would I be without my sister's progeny in an early grave? I teach them painting strokes and persistence. They teach me how to live. End poem.
Great poem there. So, yeah, I really like this one. But where would I be without my sister's progeny in an early grave? I teach them painting strokes and persistence. They teach me how to live. I thought that it was very strong, riffing off of the prompt that every time I shun books, as scholars sometimes do, curse them as verbal graveyards, and try to make contact with common folk, I ran up against the kids in our building and felt fortunate after a few brushes with those little cannibals to return to my reading in one piece. Great use of kids versus adults to explore the nuances of creative expression and bust the illusions of supposed sophistication that comes with maturity. So I thought it was very strong, right, as usual. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, progeny, whether it's ours or our relatives or our neighbors, are amazing things. They all reach those various stages in life when a phrase occurs to them and they think they've invented it, or they're brave enough to repeat something that's slightly dirty that get heard. They want to be expressive. I love the way they are described as little cannibals, being able to survive. And then Neutron took that prompt and turned it right around with the title, the potty mouth aphorisms. You know, they all learn the dirty little things to say, and we have to sit there and think a little bit and think about it. And do you say something? Do you not? I mean, children are like small trout all around us, flitting up and downstream in endless motion. But you know, better your sister's kids who have to leave at some point. But while they're around, they will educate you in all sorts of fascinating ways, and really give you a lust for living and a return to your roots. I love the pick and then the point of view. Excuse me, I wrote pick. I love the point of view and the wry humor.
Thanks, Laurent.
Absolutely. Great comment, Laurent. Yeah, and we forget that Günter Grass was also a very great comic novelist as well. And I like that you brought that to our attention there with your write as well, Neutron. And Pam, I'll give you a final word.
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful brevity. I really like particularly that second stanza and the last one. And I like how they speak on the idea of growth through travels and growth through, you know, sometimes that you know, learning can be a brutal process. And sometimes we realize that we can't do it all alone, that we need to be taught and we need to teach others. So just an absolutely stunning write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, so I see we've got our next one up.
Yes, yeah, so it's Babbler's poem, and I've lost track with all these sound clouds as to who's up next. So, Pam, if you don't mind, would you be able to read this one?
I would be happy to do that, absolutely. All right. This is She Purrs by Babbler, and it goes like this. I used to get pink in the cheeks, peach creeping up my ears, washing over my neck, when Mother doused me with those words, "You're brilliant, absolutely brilliant." Aunts and uncles fawning, asking what she was going to do with me on account of my shining intellect and porcelain features. The deluge continued, and Coitlin blush faded as commentary continued to roll in, exploratory roots settling into deeper soil, deep green foliage experimentally reaching for sun. One of the smartest students I've ever taught. You understand everything instantly. Does anyone else know the answer? Each remark shearing another facet into the diamond twinkle, glittering eyes of the eagle purring ominously behind my emerald gaze. She threatens to let I know out at the gate rather than socially well-received thank you, but I rein her in. That glamorous beast, soft and beautiful and predatorial, is hidden behind a sheer screen. If they knew that what I know, what a delightful and dangerous creature she is, the showing will cease. The showering will cease. And what is a rose without water, or a beast for that matter? Sometimes I glimpse the shadow of a passing panther lying in the deep wells of another's eyes. We nod to each other, grins askew. We know that we know the best kind of compliment, the keeper's smile and the beast's purr. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, so I thought this was a really strong riffing of the prompt. And prompt was the second one. You are vain and wicked, as genius should be. Yes, highly identifiable confessional poem. Purring beasts, indeed. And she takes us through all of the hues of ego, from, you know, denial to reveling in its own glory and vanity, and painful and yet simultaneously filled with truth and beauty and wisdom. Great life. And Laurent, your thoughts? I see. I actually apologize. I see Laurent has dropped. Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I can just imagine Babbler being in a classroom, being asked if somebody else knew the answer. And I just, I really enjoyed this poem. I think sometimes people could view it as arrogance, but not if he's got the skills to back it up. And this is another one of our writers who has mad skills. I think all of our writers in general do. And I particularly like the last three stanzas. Since we are short on time, I will not recite them again, but very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, I'll give you final.
Yeah, I really liked how raw and honest this is. You know, as always, Babbler's got a great talent. I like that she takes us back to the childhood with all the praise. And I like particularly how there's this general message that when you're somebody who receives praise for your intellect, you know that you're intelligent, you know you learn quicker, or you know the answer, it's sometimes difficult to hold back that ego. And that you really have to learn that balance, that holding back when it's needed. So really just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and I believe you've already posted our next one, right, Neutron? It's
Weaver of Dreams.
Yep, and we've got our final sound cloud, so I will hit play.
I look at those around me, who must be moving in slow motion, or has an inherent biological predisposition, left them all devoid of vision. I am at all times 3 sentences and 10 thoughts ahead of the troglodytes who gravitate towards this intellect. I am light years beyond their amoeba-like existence. Let them mew and grovel. Their sycophantic antics amuse. I accept the meals, bottles of wine, theatre tickets, holidays and whores with which they hope to impress. I soar and swoop with impunity, but there will be a time when frailty and old age may mean that those I've stepped on going up will retaliate as I'm going down.
So, thank you for the SoundCloud, Weaver of Dreams. A great take on prompt 2. So this is another one on prompt 2. And I especially like, I soar and swoop with impunity, but there will be a time when frailty and old age may mean that those I've stepped on going up will retaliate as I'm going down. Fun, funny, and full of wisdom. Great poem. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was drawn to the same section, and I have to say it, I'm impressed with the take no prisoners attitude of this piece. It's as if Weaver is that acid on the page and then provided sage wisdom at the end of the poem. Rings true to life. Very enjoyable.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was just absolutely wonderful. I think Weaver makes wonderful sound clouds, and she has a gift for storytelling. I really like this all the way through in her use of scientific language. I am at all times 3 sentences and 10 thoughts ahead of the troglodyte who gravitate towards this intellect. I am light years beyond their amoeba-like existence. There really is the whole idea of someone who has lost their sense of humanity in, you know, in ego that has taken over. I like how she goes kind of, it does the whole, you know, mad scientist type voice. And I soar and swoop with impunity, but there will be a time when frailty and old age may mean that those I've stopped. You know, like the whole idea that there's a sudden realization that, yeah, I'm genius now, I'm unstoppable now, but what happens when old age takes over? I really liked that idea, and so excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, we are ready for our next one.
Okay, so the next poem is by Goranwy, and I will give this one a read and not put myself on mute while I'm talking.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. So this is Goranwy, A Vanity of Jealousy. In my vanity of doubt and jealousy, castrating souls of words with the language of the knife, shunning harem libraries one book at a time, becoming a pimping puppet on the back of writing poetry, in the comfort of the pen, my noise, an empty drum, made in eunuch criticism by the farce of failure. But wicked in self-concept created by my genius, spelling what my right hand writes with the pen of doubt, this librarian admits to vanity with no sense of shame, stealing lines as cut up, shouting out his name to critics who can't read or write but thump the empty page, writing nothing but a pack of lies. End poem.
We've done Neutron. This was another one to prompt to. And I thought it was a strong voicing of truth. It had that fiery invocational tone, reminiscent of the Old Testament prophets, scathing and powerful. Very well done. Great, great poem. And Pam, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Pam? Okay, she might have stepped away. Neutron, your thoughts.
Yeah, certainly. So there's some very strong imagery in this poem, and I think you could almost cut the air with a quill. It is emotionally charged and impactful. My favorite part was in the comfort of the pen, my noise and empty drum made in eunuch criticism by the farce of failure. And then also stealing lines as cut up, shouting out his name to critics who can't read or write but thump the empty page. Both scathing and brilliant, and the way that Gronwy dances between metaphor and emotion was superb. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, I guess we're ready for our next one.
Okay, so Richard, I might get you to read this one by Daniel Deschino.
Okay, so this is called Creation Symphony by Daniel Deschino, and it goes like this. Oh, what creations will bloom from the well-nurtured heart, one simple note from a piano, the child's hand floats as a dandelion seed in the spring air. It gives a voice to the breeze, entices all who hear. Imagine now a symphony in the hands of the masters, the harmony of visionaries, music for humanity to define emotion. And as God released both Gabriel and Satan, creation from mind releases minds of creation. A simple, weightless, measureless thought to create. Limitless. One warm stray desert raindrop to save the lone parched flower. Or one frozen winter snowflake to release an avalanche. Death. Blood plasma for the potable and poisoned. The petulant. The providentially powerful. I am surrounded. The harmonious and the cacophony, the sinful and the soulful, the virtuous and the voracious. They look down on the muddled masses, the bungled and the botched. They decide, and we look on. But all start, even me, with the first note of a child. And what is appealing on the second note played is the seeds of creation, the heaven of harmony, or the demons of dissonance. And the mind dances to the baton of the heart. End poem. And Pam, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wow, this is just stunning. Great read there, Richard. And I really like this poem by Daniel, with his use of nature. And start out, one simple note from a piano and a child's hand floats as a dandelion seed in the spring air. It gives a voice to the breeze, entices all who hear. I like how he writes about learning to communicate through music and learning to listen and love and appreciate through music. I really also like one frozen winter snowflake to release an avalanche of death, blood plasma for the portable and poison. Potable and poison, the petulant, the provincial, powerful, wonderful use of alliteration there. And the whole idea that we can so easily go from being surrounded by the beautiful to being surrounded by death and war and those demons of dissonance, you know, just an absolutely amazing write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I'll keep it brief. I was thoroughly impressed with this thought-provoking piece. It rings true to reality, and it brings into mind the concept of nature versus nurture with the reference to the first and second note. Very well done.
Absolutely. I, too, really love this piece. Fantastic word crafting throughout. I like the juxtaposition of Gabriel and Satan. It seems a pitch-perfect parallel to Beethoven and Hitler, a wonderful take on the problem, philosophical and soul-searching as usual. And with that, let's go back to you, Neutron, for our next one.
Certainly. So, Pam, if you could read Incubus 2's poem, that would be great.
Absolutely. This is Never Left Alone by Incubus 2, and it goes like this. Born owing the devil a day of work and punished daily for my inability to conform, the blurred lines of text and print deep reversed upon my sinful skin. And yet all the beauty I create or attempt to initiate was formed with the wrong hand. For being keggy-handed or southpaw broke some unwritten oath and law, but all my right-hand is suited for is a thing that is indeed sinful. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, so this was prompt 3. I remain restless and dissatisfied. What I not with my right hand, I undo with my left. What my left hand creates, my right fist shatters. So, yeah, I like this piece. I identified it for I, too, am a lefty, and the tale of prejudice against left-handed throughout history shows the absurdity of prejudice and offers hope. For today, it is a non-issue, and so may it be with all discrimination and prejudice. A great storytelling poem with a strong message of hope. And Neutron, your thoughts?
How funny. I'm a lefty as well. So there's that.
Yeah.
And I don't quote me, but I believe Pam might actually be too, but I'm not entirely sure. Sure. So it wasn't a thing when I was growing up, but my father is right-handed because he used to be whipped across the knuckles when he wrote with his left hand. So a refreshing angle to the prompt. And my favorite part was the blurred lines of text imprinted deep reversed upon my sinful skin. Nicely penned.
Absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts? Did you already comment?
Yeah, I
haven't lost it.
Oh. Okay, I'm not on mute. I just had to check. Okay. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. My
yeah.
apologies. I got
okay.
lost as to who commented and who didn't.
Okay. All right. Now, this is great. I like how he uses a kind of a bit of dark humor at the end that really makes an impact. And I like that this is about somebody who refuses to conform to society's norms, but also takes a look at the idea of throughout history how people have been condemned for not being that perfection that people were looking for. I really liked this all the way through and thought it was very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next one.
Okay, so I'll give this one a read. It's by Peter Solway, and it's called Ludwig and Adolf. Condemned to mortal fame, heaven in common, angels both stubborn framed in mama's parlor, grim master of da-da-da-dum, etching of Beethoven, replaced by shot of Adolf, if only. Da-da, to come all artists, composers of manifestos, lecturers with machine guns. Da-da-da-dum, brothers grim to do a brisk trade in everything, black market of spring, slush of snow-stained crimson. Mama brandishing a gaseous behind to a mean little half-shaven man, pianola condemned, key-banging, treadle of steam, trains, polishing her orchestral king, Ludwig almost smiling, etching behind glass, transparent as ode of joy. Mama farting, singing, that's my boy, able with baton, da-da-da-dum. Hero of imagination, Adolf putting his gas mask on, rat with typhus to end. If only, bombs of renovation to rearrange that room, galleries in the Vatican, popes staring at weeping saints, histories, all the eyeballs same, ghosts to follow one around the room, jails eternally, brother born on the kitchen bench, Lud and Adolf looking on fluor, disgusted, banging out chopsticks,
da-da-da-dum. Birth and death the same to him, da-da. Then with Eva gone, but Ludwig, mama's bust to live on. Hold that grand piano down, let gravity have the last say. Light-hearted da-da to blow away. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. And Tam, let's start comments with you.
Yeah, I thought this, well, yeah, first of all, that was an amazing read there. You really pulled off the Beethoven's da-da-da-dums. I really like how he takes us through history with that wonderful dark humor that he has. I like that he mentions the Brothers Grimm, and I like that he brings in the beginning of Dadaism. Dada to come, all artists, composers of manifestos, lectures with machine guns. And then brings in, of course, mothers a few times. The whole idea that the genius who goes on to do good in the world and the genius who goes on to do evil in the world, both have had mothers. As I said, the dark humor throughout is great. I really like Baum's renovation to rearrange that room, galleries in the Vatican, Pope staring at weeping saints, history's all the eyeball same, ghosts to follow one around the room. You know, those idea that those ghosts, no matter what religion or what sect they come from, they follow you. There's this, history has a very haunting way about it. I also really like that he mentions birth and death the same to him, Dada then with Eva gone, but Ludwig, mama's bus to live on. Just a really thought-provoking and intriguing lines, and very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, and great point, Pam, that that Neutron's read really brought it to life, because ironically, when I read the poem, I didn't get it that da-da-da-dum was Beethoven's fifth. So if I had read it, I probably would have muffed it inadvertently, despite my best efforts at giving a good read. I thought the dark humor, gallows humor, mirrored Grasse's novel quite well. A wonderful poking of fun at history's monsters, as well as its sacred cows of creative genius. A highly intelligent poem. Just a great job. And Neutron, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, look, the only thing I'll add to this is it reads like an intellectual masterpiece. Fast pace. I like the repetition of da-da-da-dum. It punctured the poem like a blade, almost mimicking a vignette rather than having the numbered structure. I think, if I'm honest, it's one of those poems you need to read from start to finish a few times. It was hard to dissect it, and I think it needed a breakneck speed, because that's just how he writes. It's almost like a typewriter. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so I know we're running out of time, but we probably have time for one more. I see it.
Certainly. So, Richard, I'll get you to read Mahasalani 1848's poem, and that'll round us out for the night.
Okay, so this one is called The Pain of Too Much Knowledge by Mahasalani 1848, and it goes like this. Right choices dance beyond my reach. When too much knowledge floats about my brain, inaction occupies the breach, leaving decisions endlessly constrained. Sometimes I wonder then if he, aware of how and when and where each thread will cross and where the breaks will be, is loath to pull a string or longs instead omniscient daggers in his heart to let time's fabric ravel on its own a while that he might stand apart and rest before the rift is overthrown. End of poem. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Certainly. I just had to make sure I wasn't on mute. It read like a free verse poem, which for me is the sign of a good rhyming poem. And the word choices flowed. And as for the content, it was a deeply spiritual take on the prompts, but nuanced. And the extended metaphor did not go unnoticed. I think for a brevity, the poet has certainly weaved some great principles together. Clever job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was an excellent brevity. I have to agree with you, Neutron, that great rhyme to the point that it reads like a free verse poem because nothing is forced. I really like that second stanza. Sometimes I wonder then if you where, how, and when, and where each thread will cross. I like the idea of that she brings up the thread of the fates and, you know, the idea of them being crossed or being cut. And really feel, I feel get a general feeling of knowing that the world is falling apart, but not really knowing what'll be that thread that, you know, breaks the camel's back. So just excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. So I too thought the rhyming scheme was compelling and that it drove home the spiritual poem. Very well crafted, very deftly done. A pleasure to read out loud, too, on the air. Just the words kind of just melted right in my mouth, which is always a good sign. Okay, so as opposed to trying to rush through, instead, why don't we turn it over to you, Pam, and have you tell us what's coming up in the next in a half an hour from now.
All right. Well, a half hour from now, we have Into the Darkness, Dark Humor, and I ran a contest offering up some lines from a dark humor series that Intimidus Rex does called The Loon, but I also gave people the opportunity to just use their own dark humor prompt that they come up with. And we're doing that in celebration of both April 1st being April Fool's Day, and March 30th being Rex's birthday. So it's sure to be a fun show. You know, people are welcome to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy. And I am definitely looking forward to it.
Absolutely, yeah. April Fool's is always such a fun thing to celebrate. So sounds like it's going to be great fun. And I actually gave a SoundCloud, so I'll be there in spirit.
Wonderful.
And absolutely, yeah. And I want to just do a plug for Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight, Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Laurent. And it's always a good show. And feel free to just throw a poem onto the board and join them on the air. In addition, I want to thank our guests, so that Thomas and Martha and, of course, Laurent. And I want to give thanks to you, Pam, and special thanks to my co-host, Neutron. And then finally, I want to thank Fill My Eyes, Gene, for making things work in the background. Always appreciated. And a final thanks to our poets. Without you guys, there is no show. And you make it happen for us every 2 weeks. And we put up the prompts, and every 2 weeks you guys deliver. And this week was no exception. It is going to be very tough for us to judge this one, Neutron. I don't know.
I know not.
Yeah, but somehow we'll do it, and it's always a good problem to have. And so, you know, just a wonderful night of poetry again. So these inspired bys of famous novelists are always very well received by the community here on All Poetry and Late Night Poets. So thanks again.
And Richard, if I might just interject.
Yeah.
And yeah, and just say thank you to you, because you always miss out on the thank you. So thank you for being such a great co-host and main host and setting up the contest and providing such inspirational material each fortnight.
Well, it's my pleasure. Okay, I think that is our show, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks again, Neutron. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.